This is the VIP Lounge. Now with your host, 5'8" of defiance, Alex Greenfield, and representing the 305 international hustler extraordinaire, MVP.
So big weekend news when you've got the guy who has been couched for quite some time as, you know, the future face of WWE getting popped on a suspension. I mean, I went through that. I mean, you remember, well, it was right before you started. My first pay-per-view as head writer was the Great American Bash in 2006. And a couple of guys got popped for elevated liver enzymes right before the show. So legit, I'm sitting at home. I had Penny and I lived in Stamford at that point. And I'm sitting in my apartment getting ready to go to bed. It's like 11:45 at night on the SmackDown had just aired. So it must have been the Friday night right before a Sunday night show. So our go home show had just finished airing and I get a call. And I recognize the number right away. Hey, Alex. Hey, Vince. How's it going? It's late. And late night calls from Vince are one of two things, man. One is he's got a crazy idea in his head, and I'm going to be on the phone for a fucking hour just shooting the shit about ideas with Vince, which were actually pretty fun calls, although I was very often in an altered state of consciousness at the point of the call. So Lord knows how he reacted to that. Or I was getting bad news. And in this instance, one of my mains was The Undertaker versus the Great Khali, and Khali got popped. And goddamn, I can't remember who the other person was, but two people on the show ended up getting popped in, as it turned out, false positives on their tests. So everything ended up fine. But for that Sunday, I was 100% screwed. So I end up, you know, on the phone with Vince at 11:30 at night. So I know folks in creative have to be freaking the fuck out right now. But Roman Reigns got popped on a wellness violation. And to his credit, as a man, immediately went on Twitter and 100% owned it. I don't have the tweet up in front of me, but the guy gets on there and he's like, basically he said, I'm embarrassed for this. I own it. This is on me. But literally, you know, what, 12 hours after he gets set for the main event of the next pay-per-view, a triple threat with he and Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, gets a 30-day suspension. So that's, you know, it's pretty fucking brutal, and it's got to be brutal on every aspect as far as the business is concerned, and most especially to Roman, who, you know, as you know, like a lot of internet folks are real haters of the guy, and I got to tell you, like, I see all the tools there, and it's a bummer to me that this hits him. I mean, it's like the hernia he had a couple of years ago all over again. Like, right as he's starting to find a groove in this sort of heel persona, this happens. It's a real bummer to me.
It's a bummer to everyone, and, yeah, most of all to him, I'm sure. And it's tough because, you know, I kind of took on, you know, the internet haters, as you put them, as you labeled them. I don't necessarily know what he got popped for. I have no idea. It's none of my business. I honestly don't care. But I did. I went on my Twitter and I talked about how, you know, the wellness policy. There are items that you can buy from GNC or Nutrition Depot or the vitamin shop over the counter that are not at all illegal, but are if you take it, it will cause you to be in violation of the wellness policy. Stuff like androstenedione, you know, like, you know, certain precursors. I also touched this issue too. The supplement industry is very, very shady. And there has been a number of times where it was revealed that supplements that were on the market had illegal substances in them. And I remember when I was with WWE, I would make it a point that, you know, certain supplements that I would take, because the wellness, you know, the evil Dr. Black said that, you know, if you take a substance, if you take some sort of a product and it says on the product, as many do, that this is banned by whatever governing body, athletic governing body, or that this could cause a positive, common sense, don't take it. So anything that I took, I always saved the bottles and at least one or two of the capsules or pills, so that if I did test positive for something, I could say, hey, look, this is what I was taking and I didn't know, and it's not labeled. I'm not saying that that's what happened with Reigns, but for people to just immediately jump on a negative bandwagon and cyber lynch the guy, I thought it was kind of ridiculous. And as professional athletes, you know, we are constantly trying to do our best to be on top and to do what we have to do to sometimes just get through the day. And in this particular case, with Roman Reigns in particular, I've met the guy. Nice enough. I don't know him well, but I met him, and I haven't really heard anybody say anything bad about him. Anybody that knows him, I'm not talking about all these yahoos on the internet that just have an opinion. But what came to mind with the internet's treatment of Roman Reigns in general is Rocky Maivia. When Rocky Maivia made his debut, man, the WWE universe back then, WWF, hated him to the point that they were chanting, "Die, Rocky, die." And man, what the fuck, man? You like die? Really? This guy's an entertainer, a performer. You don't like him, so you wish die? And you look, Rocky Maivia went on to become The Rock. If anybody ever found their groove, it was Dwayne Johnson as The Rock. And he went on to become one of the most beloved WWEF performers of all time. And a lot of the people that were chanting "Die, Rocky, die" are knocking down the cinema doors to see his building, his movies. He's got one out this weekend that is apparently doing real well. And it kind of makes me laugh. This dude's done over $1 billion in box office sales. But he was the guy that the internet, the wrestling quote unquote fans were chanting "Die, Rocky, die." And those same people loved The Rock later on. He became, one of the biggest, most over guys in the history of the industry. I don't understand what the Roman Reigns hatred is about. And I know a lot of times the WWE universe, it's not the WWE universe, but it seems like there's a segment of people who, they have their internet darlings whom they love, and they want to see that guy get, whatever. And they, I hear the term "shoved down our throats." We don't want Roman Reigns shoved down our throats. Well, you know what? There are a lot of women who love Roman Reigns and who tune in to watch Roman Reigns. And as you said, your wife, who's not a wrestling fan, if Roman Reigns is on the screen, she's, "Ooh, yeah, I want to watch that guy." So, in a manner of speaking, there are a lot of women who would love to have Roman Reigns crammed down there, shoved down their throats. The old thing, your superstar, the guy you want to, pin your company on is the guy that women want to be with and men want to be. And Roman Reigns he's a stud. He's tall, good looking, has the athletic ability. I've actually seen a few of his matches. And, with the "you can't wrestle" chants, well, they used to chant that shit to Cena, too. And, if anybody – it just boggles my mind. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't know where this comes from. I don't know what he popped positive for. And like I said, I don't care. That's between him, the company, and his family. But I just don't understand the – and then, the flat scans were out in force, calling him a drug addict. And it's like, well, where do you people jump to these conclusions from? It boggles my mind how people just develop what borders on, by their words, a hatred for a character, a guy who's entertaining you. He's doing his job. He's going out there and he's performing. I don't get the level of animosity towards the guy. I don't know, Alex, can you explain it to me?
Yeah. I mean, look, we've talked about this on the show before. Like, I think the wife girlfriend test is a big test. Not as though speaking as though there aren't plenty of female fans, but Roman Reigns comes on. He's the guy who dudes want to be and women want to be with, and that's great. Like, that is not every performer by any stretch of the imagination. And we know this from failed experiments. You know, I'm not going to bury anyone, but failed experiments that we have seen. It's, the level of hate, I think it is, there is some degree of, getting a guy, like, I hate to use the push down your throat after you use such a great monologue, and thanks for using my wife as an example on that. but I mean, it really is
all love.
But I mean, it really is true. We have talked on the show about our open thing, and I personally you know, whatever. But some of the hate, I think, is like. Saying haters is such a dismissive line, and I don't mean it to be that, but I think some of it is a reaction to somebody so obviously being tapped to be the guy. I mean, they literally say that on the programming, but some of it I don't really understand. I mean, I can't tell you for myself what the last bad Reigns match has been. And I mean, look, I mean, he's been in there with some great guys, you know, Rollins and Hunter and AJ Styles. I mean, this guy has been on a roll of really good matches. But, you know, I feel like when fans chant the "you can't wrestle" thing, at that sort of, it's bullshit. But all of the, oh, he's a drug addict, oh, he's this and that stuff. I mean, first off, none of us, and I mean none of us, know what the wellness violation was for. So I can't, you know, none of us can speak to that. I will say something very positive. I was there after you know, Eddie passed away and the new sort of wellness policy was under construction. You've seen a lot fewer negative impacts from, you know, forget even illegal drugs, things like Oxy and frickin' Soma was a really bad thing when I was there. Man. Like,
Soma's,
everybody was
Soma's
fucking
killed more wrestlers than I think the leading cause of professional wrestlers' death would probably have to be Soma's behind, or if after heart attacks, if not, you know, directly above it would be Soma's, just the damage that I've seen them do. And you know, and we talked about this with Santino. When I came into professional wrestling, I was a, what year was it? 2000 is when I started my professional wrestling training. And I remember pills were just a part of the wrestling culture. And everybody, not everybody, but way too many guys would get fucked up on pills. And it was just, you know, it permeated the culture. And when WWE, who they're the top of the pops and the industry leaders, when they instituted the wellness program, we all groaned and we were all pissing and moaning. But you can't argue with the fact that now the wellness policy has saved lives. The pill culture has essentially died in professional wrestling. When I do indie shots, you know, I remember back in the days when I was coming up, you know, you had guys, young indie guys who, you know, thought it was cool to pop pills because, ah, that's what we do. I'm a pro wrestler, brother. Yeah, I got pills, man. You know, piss off with all that. I was never into that. That just wasn't my bag. Fortunately, I was spared. I don't dig opiates. I never got into it. But I saw the influence that it had on a lot of younger guys and the influence that it had on, you know, the wrestling culture. And once the wellness policy was installed – and guys were no longer able to abuse pills. And guys that had legitimate injuries, you know, had to have a legitimate prescription for these pills. You don't see it anymore on the indies. You don't see guys, you know, getting pilled up. And I mean, I'm sure it still happens here and there. But for it to be a pronounced part of the culture, it doesn't exist anymore. Now, you know, you can't even get beer in a locker room anymore. Guys got protein shakes and want to go back to their room and play Xbox and call their girlfriends. So, which I guess, you know, in the grand scheme of things isn't terrible. But the wellness policy, as much as we all hated it at first, has undoubtedly saved lives. And you know, we've talked about the issue of cannabis. You know, for those that aren't familiar with the wellness policy, cannabis, if you test positive for cannabis, you don't get suspended. You get a fine. I know because I was fined several times for my use of cannabis when I was there. And I think I personally would have my own reservations about over-the-counter items, you know, that you could buy at a supplement store getting you a suspension. But at the end of the day, I guess, you know, the spirit of the law is let's take care of people. And, you know, it's kind of hard to argue with that. How do you argue with that? How do you knock that down? And I just think of the guys that I know personally who were friends or who were colleagues that I was friendly with that died because of, you know, drug abuse. If there was a wellness policy 20 years ago, there'd be a lot more guys around today.
I think you're absolutely right. And I mean, look, you know that I have, you know, my personal take is I have a very, I guess, libertarian edge when it comes to drugs, and especially when it comes to so-called performance-enhancing drugs in a non-competitive sport. I mean, I always use the example of Brad Pitt in Troy. Brad Pitt's a guy, when my wife and I, after college, first moved out to L.A., my girlfriend at that point, first moved out to L.A., she worked in the Larchmont area of L.A., which was right near Paramount, which I'm guessing must be near where Brad Pitt lived at that point, right? Brad Pitt's he's relatively tall. I guess he's about your height, 6 feet, 6 feet one, something like that. But he's not a large framed guy. You look at Brad Pitt in Troy. I will say to you, and I will say till my dying day, and I would say this to Pitt, there were chemical attributes that made him have that body. Like, he was huge, man. He was oh God, what's that word you used the other day? Swolled, right? He was totally swolled. And look, as a non-athlete, I mean, I've been upfront about this. I've been training. I'm back training since the hernia surgery. I'm back training for the first week. I would absolutely I am using creatine and a shit ton of protein and cutting carbs out of my diet and doing all the normal shit. I would absolutely take a boost if I could.
You need glutamine. Don't forget glutamine. It helps in your recovery. But again, you're 42, 43. So
yeah, exactly. And I don't have any moral compunction about making your body look better and making yourself feel better. And I would prefer that to be something that was under the supervision of a medical professional who really understood that than the backdoor thing. So I think, you know, gray markets aside, I have a sort of fundamental philosophical disagreement with banning, particularly nowadays with chemistry being advanced as it is, with banning muscle building substances and feel better substances in WWE. But I also really feel like I can say this from firsthand knowledge. I mean, we both have had friends who passed away from drug use. I think on the whole, the WWE wellness program has been a net good for the business and for the longevity of friends of you and I. And I think that's nothing but a good thing. And all it takes is, you know, take a fucking look at the Jake the Snake documentary. And how badly drugs wrecked his life, and how WWE's new policy and their treatment policy and that sort of thing has helped guys like him and plenty of other guys who haven't been as public about it, who we both know and have talked to about it. I think it's a net good. But back to Reigns, the thing that bums me out the most about it is there is this. Antipathy toward him that I think is already a little bit unfair. And the fact that people are using this as an, I told you so, without reckoning the part.
Yeah, that's just lame.
Yeah. And they don't reckon the part that you people are all online, yelling at this guy about how he can't do this and he can't do that all the time. And then whatever the thing is, and again, nobody knows what he got popped for, but whatever the thing is, you guys have been yelling at him that he's not good enough. And then now you're yelling at him, see, you're a junkie or whatever it is these people are fucking yelling. Cut the guy some slack, man. Like I really, it is a bummer to me that it's what is it called? Confirmation bias, right?
Yeah.
Like anything this guy did, is going to make a certain type of fan dislike him more. But I think your Rocky point is really true. If he takes this opportunity to retool a little bit, and you know, I and many others are a big fan of that Rock type heel turn. What Rock did with Farouk at that point, and Mark and the Nation, Reigns would be well served to take this opportunity, embrace the boos of the fans, and run forward with that. Because if you're going to have haters, fucking give the haters what they want and let them hate you, and that'll
give
turn
them
things
a
around.
Reason to hate. Give exactly. them a reason to hate. And I'll say this in conclusion, you know, some flat scan said, you must be a Roman Reigns mark, which I thought was some pretty stupid shit to say, but I'm a mark for all of my brothers and sisters that lace up the boots and climb through the ropes. And there's a special fraternity, sorority, camaraderie that we share as practitioners of the craft, whether you do it on the weekend at a VFW hall or whether you do it in Madison Square Garden. We're practitioners of an art form and we're passionate about it. Reigns and I, we've never had a drink together. We've never hung out. You know, we've met, we've shook hands. Hey, how you doing? But I feel bad for his circumstances, and I'm pulling for him. I hope that, you know, he's able to take this setback and catapult himself forward. You know, they say, you know, take two steps back and five steps forward or, you know, whatever however it goes. I never do this, and I hate doing this, as you know, the fantasy fanboy booking and all that shit. And I hate that nerdy bullshit. However, in this case, it would be cool to see Reigns get retooled because, you know, Rollins had, you know, when they broke up the Shield, Rollins had a makeover. What's his name? The other one, the crazy one,
Ambrose,
Dean Ambrose. You know, he's the jeans and t-shirt guy. He had a makeover. Reigns is, you know, still essentially wearing the same gear that he was in the Shield. If, you know, he had a makeover and they, you know, brought him back as a heel and, you know, changed his gear up a little bit and said, okay, you know, we're not jumping. And I'm not second guessing whatever they want to do, but if they said, okay, let's retool this guy, let's bring him back in that heel role and maintain his status, but now we'll make him a heel, we'll give people a reason to boo him, we'll take those boos that he already gets, and we'll amplify them times 100, guess who wins? And I'm always pulling for my team, and my team is the talent.
We are on the same team in that thing. Though our friend Drugs Delaney is always calling me a good brother, and I am always quick to say that I am not. I am a good, you know, second cousin twice removed or whatever. the dude who yelled at you that you were a Reigns mark, I will officially say I am a Reigns mark, and I'm a Reigns mark for everyone from, you know, from Grado to Kota Ibushi, you know, like the whole, I want everybody to be successful. And there's certainly with the brand split and everything that's coming at WWE and just the wonderful, independent scene right now, there's room for everyone, which leads me to a segue. And this is something I just saw. We didn't get to talk about this in the show prep at all. But did you see that RevPro over in the UK has now signed Big Van Vader versus Will fucking Ospreay?
I just saw that this morning on Twitter as I was flipping through it, and I thought, RevPro, way to capitalize on that. Kudos
Absolutely.
To you. How fucking smart was that? And you know what? I would have to say initially, that's not a match that I would want to see, Vader versus Ospreay. But because of everything around it, well, yeah, fuck yeah. I want to see it now. You know, if you had booked that match without the controversy that caused it, I would have been like, yeah, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, that's really weird, Ospreay. Right?
But now, yeah, I absolutely would like to see that match now. And I'd like to see how they approach it. I'd like to see how they incorporate the contrasting styles, body types, generational types, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to be interesting. So kudos to RevPro. I think they're going to do some pretty good business with that because, people are going to talk and people want to see that. And Will, we need to get you on this podcast. We need to have you in the VIP lounge. So somebody tell Will I reached out, and I know he's a good guy. I know he'll do it. But we'd love to talk to you, so get back to us. Oh, and our boy Jimmy Havoc, he said he's going to join us soon, didn't he? Your man crush.
We are going to be bringing Mr. Havoc on this coming week, I believe. So next week's show. What I like to think of as two great heels with very different promo styles, and MVP and you, or MVP and Havoc being on the same show. I want one of the things I'm going to mark out. I'm going to take off my friend of Hassan hat, and I'm going to take off my friend of James hat. And I'm going to be a 100% mark and ask you guys at some point during the show next week to just cut promos on each other, because I think that would be so fun. And legit, I don't know who the babyface is. Between you guys, your heel personas are so good. Your villain personas are so great that I don't know how that works. But you know that's a match I fucking want to see one of these days. I want to see you guys. I want to see you kicking the shit out of him and him chicken shitting a win out of you. Like, that's the dream match for me. But I think, look, you guys are going to get along like gangbusters. And one of the things that you're going to get along with is we're going to break Court's heart and talk some politics, because I think we've both been talking about this offline. I really feel like Brexit passing totally took me flat-footed. I really expected that in the end, the UK would elect to remain a part of the European Union. And I was thoroughly, completely stunned, as I'm sure Havoc was. We talked about this on the show. I did a show with Ian Eddie Bear the other week, Ed Ferrara the other week, and we talked a bit about Brexit. And it seemed like a possibility, but if I'd have been betting at one of those UK betting parlors where, you know, you can bet on fucking anything, I'd have bet that the UK,
you could bet on aliens landing, you know, you could bet on anything over there.
Yeah, no shit. Yet another reason why until last week, I wish I lived in the UK, but it wasn't even close. Like, it was 4 percentage points, I believe, 52 to 48, more or less.
Alex, how do you say that wasn't even close?
Look at our elections recently, like our presidential elections going back to 2000 on forward. Like, 52 to 48 is a pretty long, like, we very often have 50.9 versus 49.8, you know, type elections over here.
Yeah, but how do you say that that's not close when you're talking about 4 points? It wasn't, you know, it wasn't. And I'll give you this, for example, because
it was certainly, I thought it would be settled by a percentage point or two. 4% is not a small margin in a contemporary election, given how given the level of antipathy between conservatism and liberalism these days.
Well, I'll have to, as I said, I'm not done researching the subject. And, you know, for those who follow me on Twitter and who listen to the podcast and who know me, you know, I'm an Anglophile. I love England. You know, the United Kingdom, I have a great time. London, as many of you know, is one of my favorite cities on the planet. I spend lots of time in Manchester. As a matter of fact, I've been told I'm an honorary Mancunian. I love it over there.
And, I've always thought of you as the Mancunian candidate.
Yeah, I see what you did there. I'd need to do a little bit more research to understand all of the economic implications of Brexit. And for those who are listening that don't know, have been living under a rock, the United Kingdom, Great Britain, is part of the European – was or is still currently part of the European Union. And they had a referendum to vote whether or not they were going to leave the European Union or stay in the European Union. And for those of you that don't get to travel much, if you're a part of the European Union, there are certain trade – and again, this is macroeconomics and this is not wrestling at all, but – there are certain legalities and trade rules that allow the countries within the union to do business with one another. One of the things that I know is that if you're within the European Union, you can travel from country to country without a passport. And this is one of the issues, as I understand it. The United Kingdom is a tiny island nation. By comparison, you can fit England in Texas multiple times. And because, you know, you have an issue with so many because of the economic issues that are, you know, hitting all over the world, you have a lot of people that are, you know, immigrants that are coming into Europe and just pretty much because there is no border control where you can pass between the countries that are part of the union, you have a lot of people that are settling into the UK. And ultimately, you had an issue between the people that are saying, hey, you know, you're welcome to be here, and people that are saying, no, these immigrants are taxing our England has a national health care system, unlike the U.S. You're taxing our economy. You're taxing our health care system. You're taxing our public assistance, for lack of a better phrase. And they said, enough. We want out. We want to close our borders from the foreigners that are coming in and taxing our system. And as I said, I don't understand all of the economic implications. I don't understand exactly how it affects trade between the countries and what it does. I haven't researched enough to familiarize myself on that. But for most of the people that I've spoken to, friends of mine, it seems that a lot of the people who want the UK border closed, who voted to exit, did so because of what's been portrayed to me as xenophobia and in a lot of cases bigotry. As far as the economic implications, well, yeah, I could see how if you have an influx of people coming in from outside of your country, how it could be tax your system economically, and I don't have enough information to speak to that intelligently, but it seems to me, and it seems there are a lot of parallels between those who voted for England for the UK, you know, Brexit, the British exit, and people who are voting for Donald Trump. There seems to be a lot of parallels between the fear-mongering and the xenophobia. Now, hit me up on Twitter at the 305 MVP. If you can educate me and explain to me how it's not the same or how there's a difference, please, by all means, hit me up and educate me. I'm always up for education. But it seems that there is a definitive uptick in people. From what I can tell, the majority of the people that voted for the UK to leave were the elderly and the working class. And it seems that there's always a correlation between how do I say this? People voting against their own economic interests when they've been misinformed. And it's funny because Nigel Farage himself said, and I read this quote recently, where he was saying before the vote that if it was a close split, and I think there was like a 70-some-odd% turnout for the vote, as I understand
it. Yeah, it was a really good turnout.
And where, you know, Scotland overwhelmingly voted to stay. The implications of this are far reaching. There's talk of Scotland leaving, voting, doing another referendum because they had their own referendum whether or not they wanted to stay in the UK. And there's one, you know, they're talking about potentially doing a second referendum. They voted to stay, that one. But they're talking about doing another one to leave the United Kingdom so that they can remain a part of the European Union. There's talk of
and even just to add to that point, there's also talk in the Doyle of a reunification in Ireland so that Northern Ireland can stay apart.
That's exactly what I was talking about. Realignment
of what we've thought of as the United Kingdom. It's incredibly
as I've often referred to it as the not so United Kingdom.
Right. And that's it's I firstly, I think this is one of those where I wish we had a regular conservative guest to talk us down off the ledge or at least to give the alternate point of view. It does, you know, England first and America first sound very similar to me, too. And the pro-Trump people it sound a lot like the pro-Brexit people. And it's staggering to me, but there's this real sense of nationalism that I think flies in the face of the economic and political realities of what the world actually is right now. And it is this, we go back and forth on this on our Facebooks and whatever all the time, but there's this sense to me that there is a group of people, largely white and largely male and largely older, like our age and older, really, who are absolutely terrified of becoming not the dominant voice in their worlds, and it just there's a level of fear in these movements to me, these nationalist movements to me, that I follow whatever it is, Goddard's Law or whatever it is. Like, you never want to fucking bring up Nazism or fascism or anything like that because it does equate with it. But boy, it sure does look like the end of the Weimar Republic in the period between World War I and World War II in Germany, where, you know, this minority becomes a majority because you tell people what they want to hear about economic realities, and almost everything they say is not true in the face of the world. And I know, look, and don't get me wrong, like, you and I have disagreements on free trade and a number of other elements in politics. I think I think it's fair to say that you are to the left of where I am. But I think we both agree that we live in an interconnected world, and erecting arbitrary barriers, whether it's a wall with Mexico, you know, the great wall of Trump or whatever, or
– And Mexico's going to pay for it. Yeah,
of course they are. Ay. But it just – there's this reactionary nationalist impulse that is in a fundamental way kind of scary to me. And it's difficult for me to get my hands around, because I think what Brexit shows, at least to me, is that movement is bigger and more powerful than I – previously gave it credit for, and it is really international. I mean, you look at Marianne Le Pen in France, and there's a similar movement in the Netherlands, and similar movements in a lot of places throughout Europe, and it's pretty startling to me that people are so ignorant about the way the world operates today.
Well, maybe two points about, you know, the ignorance of the way the world operates, and I was getting to before. Nigel Farage said and I just read this quote maybe yesterday. His initial point regarding the referendum to leave, I guess his anticipating that it would possibly lose, he said that if it was as close as it was, and I'm paraphrasing, that that's not a mandate. You know, if it's as close as it is, if it doesn't win, you know, two to one, you know, where 2/3 vote either way, then it should be revisited. And I'm paraphrasing. Those weren't his exact words, but he was saying, you know, unless it's an overwhelming vote, then it's something that should be revisited. Look that up for yourselves, because I said I'm paraphrasing what he said. But essentially, now there's a – and it's a non-binding referendum, mind you. Yeah, that's very important to note. But now there's a petition going around in the UK that, as I understand it, has over 2 million signatures asking for a revote. And I was reading on Twitter a few different news sites where there were people coming out saying that they voted to leave – not thinking that it would actually happen, which boggles my mind that you would say, yeah, I want to vote for our country to leave the European Union, but I don't think it'll happen. But I'll vote leave. And then when it happens, oh, shit, I didn't really think we were going to leave. Like, wait a minute, man. You cast your vote. You need and it's a non-binding referendum. Fair enough. But, you know, if you speak, you need to think about what you're saying, you know, what the point that you want to make in this case was to leave the European Union. And then when it happened and the pound fucking took a nosedive and the global economic implications, you know, banking and et cetera, I want to see how this plays out. It's interesting to see because if, you know, what if they do a do over? Well, what if Scotland does say, hey, we want to leave? Is this the breakup of the UK? Apparently, George Soros is saying that if this actually goes through and the UK leaves, that there's talk of the disintegration of the EU, the European Union, because there are other countries that will leave. And, you know, the flip side of that, you know, you have countries like Greece and, you know, a few others that for whatever reason. And again, I don't understand, you know, all the economics of it, but don't seem to be faring very well. in the European Union, I'm upset with myself right now because I didn't do more research to have a more informed opinion. But the other thing I want to say is, I think we have a huge problem in our country, in the UK, and virtually everywhere in politics, because one of the most powerful weapons that politicians use is fear mongering. And everybody's guilty of it in our country, whether it's the left or the right. Politicians are constantly putting out political commercials where they take creative license with facts and information. And I want to make my position very clear, as you and I have discussed. I think, you know, in this country, our choices between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton is tantamount to choosing between chlamydia or gonorrhea. I think we're lose-lose. Hillary is a crook and a liar. Donald Trump is a crook and a liar with no experience. He's not a statesman. Hillary, she is quite the statesman, but I don't trust her as far as I can throw her.
Always a shit metaphor for you to use, but we'll leave that aside.
Oh, no, because, you know, Hillary's not a small woman, so I don't, you know, I can probably throw her a few feet, maybe off a cliff, maybe. But I think one of the first issues that we need to address here in our country is that Citizens Fucking United bullshit. We need to get money out of politics because the problem is all of our politics, and most people don't know this, but 70 some odd percent of a congressperson's time is spent raising money. The majority of the time that they're supposed to be working for you and me, they're working to raise money for their campaign or for their political party. And if the majority of your time is spent raising money and not actually serving the public as you're supposed to, that's terrifying to me. And when corporations are able to speak with their money, what we get is what we have now, a political system that is hopelessly corrupt. And the money is such a such an intrinsic part of politics today. If you want to become president, you need $1 billion to run for president. You can't even play. You can't even step to the plate unless you have $1 billion to run for president. I think our two-party system is absurd. The Republicans, that's the party of bad ideas, and the Democrats, the party of no ideas. You know, you got the Libertarian Party and Gary Johnson, who, you know, I think I agree with probably every other thing that he says. Bernie Sanders, who I tend to like his politics a lot more, and I like the fact that he calls out the system more often than not for what it is. You know, we need to have multiple parties, and it needs to be a level playing field. You know, and I laugh because I take it as a compliment when conservatives call me a liberal and liberals call me a conservative, because I think that means that I'm a free thinker and I think for myself and I don't fall in lockstep with my team and team politics. And it scares me because, going back to the ignorance, people get their information from 30-second talking points, whether it's Rachel Maddow or Sean Hannity. People will take what they hear from the idiot box or get their information from a Facebook meme or, you know, some bullshit on Twitter with no fact checking. They just accept that and run with it. And no one takes the time to do their own research, or people have a natural tendency to stop researching when they find something that agrees with their point of view versus the actual unbiased facts. And one thing we know for an absolute – I think it was Machiavelli. Niccolo Machiavelli said in The Prince, the king's job before everything else is to remain king. And when it comes to politicians, I think we should have term limits. It doesn't make sense to me that you have career politicians. You shouldn't be able to serve more than 2 or 3 terms maximum. And then you got to step the fuck down for a while and then you can come back. But, you know, to have somebody like Strom Thurmond, for example, you just become part of a machine. You become part of it, and you are owned by your global corporate entities that dictate your vote with their money. I mean, you know, the Democratic Party right now is a prime example, with the delegates and superdelegates and pledges, where you have constituents that are overwhelmingly saying, hey, we want Bernie Sanders. But then you have, you know, superdelegates that are saying, well, you know, and I know my constituents want Sanders, but I've pledged to Clinton. That's a problem. That's a problem. And granted, okay, our political system isn't perfect, and it's better than most, but I definitely think it's in desperate need of an overhaul. And the people on Capitol Hill that make the rules, the ones that vote themselves raises, they're not going to vote against their best interests. This only comes about when there is a groundswell among the people demanding change. And that's not going to happen as long as you have the left, right, red or blue conundrum and the constant maintenance of divisive politics, until red or blue, left or right, until we can all come together and say, hey, these people up here are working the fuck out of us, man. Politics is pro wrestling. Just, you remember, just, you know, all the terrible things that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama said about each other. And then, you know, here, because they're on the same team, all the bad things they said about each other are out the window. And now they're patting each other's backs. And hey, you know, it's pro wrestling. They get in front of you and they say what you want to hear to solicit a response. And then they go back to their mahogany wood paneled office drinking, you know, 30-year-old scotch paid for with our dollars. There has to be an overhaul of the political system. And it's not going to happen until we, the people, get on the same page and put aside our political differences to demand that the people who represent us on Capitol Hill make changes to the system. OK, I'm off my soapbox now.
Oh God, like court's gonna fucking kill me, but I can't let that lie. Here's the problem. And I mean, we've had this argument offline because we try not to have big political arguments. I think what you're talking about though is, and I mean, maybe this is the core difference between us. It's not that you're wrong in terms of, like, I would never say from an intellectual perspective, you are absolutely right. It's not going to happen until there's a sort of broad overarching movement that the political system changes. But, and here's my but, is the argument from pragmatism. it's not going to change. So you can call it picking the lesser of two evils. And I don't, I mean, you and I, and I'm not going to get into the argument about Hillary, whether she's a good or a bad person or whatever. I will always default to, she tried for nationalized healthcare and got killed on it. But like when people talk about the sort of burn your bust movement, and I can, you know, as a Vermont resident, I will talk all day about how Bernie is a fucking snake oil salesman. But it's at the end of the day, what we're talking about here is, what would it be better if we had a parliamentary system where outside groups like Johnson or like Jill Stein or like, you know, the Liberty Union Party or, you know, many of the smaller parties had equal ballot access? Yes, that would be a better America. And I truly believe that. But that is, in fact, not the America that we have. The America that we have is founded on and built for a two-party system, and all of the problems that you're talking about are real in terms of the limiting access. But when you look in terms of policy, like I have some friends who are Bernie or busters who are believers that, well, idealistically, I do not want to choose between the lesser of two evils. I'm going to throw my vote to someone else. To which I respond, like, if you believe that climate change, that anthropomorphic anthropogenic climate change exists, that is, that people are causing climate change exists, do you want somebody who doesn't believe it exists or somebody who's going to go slower on changing things than what you want? If you believe in a woman's right to her own health care, and yes, that means her right to have an abortion if she doesn't want to have a children or have a child, then you have a really clear and stark choice in terms of who's going to pick the court. Like, to me, it's a non-starter to say I idealistically am not going to vote for someone in the two-party system who represents the lesser of two evils, because the lesser of two evils is a metric shit ton less evil than the other side. And it's just, it feels preposterous to me to hold idealism to the point that you break everything down when your choice is as stark as a guy who, after Brexit happened, as the pound is crashing, is standing in front of the suites at his golf course and saying, as the British pound crashes, well, that just means that more people can come to my resort. That isn't you, and that isn't me. That's people, in the best case who can't afford any of that shit. It's selling a world that I don't want to live in. And that's, it befuddles my mind that when you look at the two legitimate choices that we have in America, that you can possibly say to yourself, if you believe as I do, like, look, if you don't believe in climate change and you believe that abortion is murder, obviously you're going to go the other way, right? Although with Trump, I even say he doesn't believe in those things. He believes in Trump stakes. It boggles my mind. Yeah, he believes in Trump University, and he believes in opening a resort and a golf course. Like, this is a guy who literally said running the country is like running a golf course, only bigger. Like, you can't fucking vote for this guy. It's crazy for me. And there is only one other vote, and that is Hillary Clinton.
You know what? I disagree. There is another vote. Monty Brewster. None of the above.
None of the above is a vote for Trump, effectively, though. Like, in pragmatic reality, it absolutely is.
I can't vote because I'm a convicted felon and I haven't had my right to vote restored. But as I said, for reasons that I'm not even going to get into anymore, because we could probably start wrapping this segment up. I would never vote for Donald Trump ever. But in good conscience, I can't vote for Hillary Clinton. I could not vote for her. I could not look myself in the mirror and vote. So I would cast my vote for a Gary Johnson. and and in this particular case. And you know what? If enough people vote for Gary Johnson, then maybe the Libertarian Party and a third party will start to gain more traction, and we'll have another option in the future. And you know what? You're right. It frightens me to think about the Supreme Court and what it could be, especially now that essentially the Fourth Amendment's dead. You know, that kind of scares me.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to like, I know, again, court's going to be killing us, and the listeners are going to be killing us. But do you want to talk about Sotomayor's brilliant dissent?
Absolutely brilliant. And listen, I want to say this real quick. I've said many times, this is the podcast for the intelligent Mark, not the smart Mark. And if, you know, us talking about the world that you live in and things that affect you directly are boring to you, then yeah, you probably shouldn't be listening to this podcast, because I've said it many times. We're not going to talk about fantasy booking and what they should have done differently on Monday Night Raw and why this guy sucks. You know, there's a million other podcasts for that. If you listen to the VIP Lounge, then this is the sort of thing that we talk about that differentiates our podcast from everybody else. Sure, we're going to talk about guys like Jimmy Havoc, and we'll talk about the Reigns situation. And we'll address issues in wrestling because I am a professional wrestler, and Alex wrote professional wrestling. We're both fans. We love it. But we also love the world we live in. We love the fact that, you know, there are things taking place around us, and we have opinions, and we want to discuss it. And we'd love for you to join in the discussion. I wish that our podcast somehow, maybe one day, we can get to the point where we can have callers.
No, I agree.
And caller driven podcast.
And I think the thing that I always point out is my thing. It's less about intelligent marks or smart marks or anything like that. To me, this is the thing. If you buy into our gimmick, to use a wrestling word, that you're eavesdropping on two guys at a bar, this is legit what Hassan and I shoot the shit about when we're sitting around talking between ourselves. Like, if you could listen to our random telephone conversations. Firstly, there's bunches of dirty shit that we're not going
lots
to share publicly.
Lots of triple X shit. Yeah, lots.
But secondly, debating politics and all of that is what we do and what we enjoy.
So, on that note, I
bastards.
Just wanna, yeah, right. And we love you, Court. At this point, I think that we're seeing. Oof, man, we're seeing how do you say, you know, it's weird because I was saying it specifically during the riots in Baltimore that, man, it feels like it's not that I was around, but, you know, it seems like it's 1968 all over again, you know, like and I've said before that it feels like for all of the progress we have made as a society. Well, you know, I'll sum it up like this. Not all, because I took a picture. I was at a Hop Scholar, a little beer place I like, a little beer bar, craft beer bar. And there were some people. Trump was here not too far from my house in the Woodlands where he did a rally. And a few people came in and they had Make America Great Again hats. And, you know, I have issues with that Make America Great Again. And we could discuss that some other time. The premise of making America great again. Great for who? And when exactly are you talking about? Because when what you're talking about, America wasn't always great for everybody. But I went over to them and I took a picture with them and I put it on my my Instagram, and I said, we can agree to disagree without killing and hating each other. You know, and we, you know, we chatted a little bit, you know, about our differences in opinion. And I told them, I think Trump is a horrible idea, but, you know, we can agree to disagree without hating and killing each other. And having said that, I find it very telling that not all Trump supporters are racists and bigots, but all racists and bigots support Trump. So on that note,
well, let's move to a place where fucking politics does end in blood, and there seems to be no other way to do it, and that is the country of Westeros.
Hey, how do you think Westeros voted on Brexit?
Where are we talking about? Dorne? Dorne voted for fucking Dexit.
Yeah, right? Man, Battle of the Bastards. What'd you think?
We were talking about this a little bit before the show. So when I was in college, I did I did the typical thing for a Jewish kid from Atlanta. I studied late Tudor and early Stuart Britain with an emphasis on Shakespeare, which brought me back a bit earlier to the Battle of Agincourt, which was the very obvious. It was the famous battle from Henry V, the Shakespearean play. And I did a lot of work on the real world thing. I thought episode 9 of Game of Thrones this season was an absolute masterwork. Their big episodes are always episode 9. They always bring in a fabulous director like Neil Marshall or people like that to direct those war episodes. But I thought the Battle of the Bastards was absolutely great. And spoiler alert, the look Sansa gives back after her, over her shoulder after Bolton goes to his final reward.
Release the hound.
One of the great moments in television of the last couple of years.
Yeah, that little the barely perceptible half smirk. It was like,
yeah.
But you know what I thought was really cool though, is when Sansa said in no uncertain terms to Jon Snow, don't do what he wants you to do. I know him. You know, don't discount my information. And as just as plainly as she said not to do that, he gave in to emotion and shit for brain.
Almost got routed from the field. Like, yeah, I mean,
by,
like
by
that
playing
close.
Directly into his hands as she warned him not to. And he almost got everybody killed. And how beautiful was it when she's sitting there next to Lord Baelish, you know, with the cavalry, you know. I was like, man, and as I'm watching this, you know, it's not often nowadays that I watch television and I get excited the way you do in a movie theater, you know, in the big climactic scenes. And man, I'm clapping my hands and I'm going, yes, yes, this is awesome.
I was up out of my chair and it was brilliant. It's funny. I saw a lot of people online were talking about, well, why didn't Sansa tell him her plan? Because Jon would have fucked it up because Jon was being ruled by his passions and Sansa did understand Ramsay more.
Right.
And knew what she had to do. Like, I thought it was an absolutely brilliant stratagem. And as a long-term Game of Thrones fan, I got to tell you, man, it is interesting to me. For a long time, I thought what the final conflict would grow into was Jon versus Daenerys. I think at the end of the day, that final conflict is going to be Sansa and Daenerys. These are no spoilers at all. I am wondering if we aren't going to get, it wouldn't be fratricide. What would it be? Sistercide. I think the big missing piece of what side is she going to land on is, Arya. I have no idea. I have no idea because politically she is a lot more with Daenerys than she is with Sansa. But Sansa's her sister, but she's going to put a shiv in somebody and it's going to be a wonderful moment, whatever it is. But I am so glad I did not like the last two Song of Ice and Fire books. I felt like Dance with Dragons and you know, Winter Solstice March or whatever the fuck the other one was, the two that were split into, or the two books that were one that were split into two were not very good. I am so glad that Benioff and that TV writing team has gone off in their own direction at this point, because I am just, I did not like last season very much. This season has, with the exception of the Dorne plot, slowly made up for it. And the Battle of the Bastards, what a fucking punctuation mark at the end of the season.
And I have to admit, the Danny and Yara flirting scene was, that was kind of fun.
For sure.
That was kind of fun watching them flirt. But, you know, I got to make this point. I never read any of the Game of Thrones books.
No? Oh, my goodness. Oh, Hassan, you're going to love them. Especially the first three, and the third book particularly, are as good as fantasy gets. They're the first three are great, and the third one specifically is fantastic. You'll love them. And Life on the Road, man, get the books on tape. I forget the guy's name, but the guy who reads the books in the audio book.
Yeah, right.
is masterful. He's just an amazing reader and totally takes you away.
Well, this is a point that I wanted to make. I've never read any of them, and perhaps I'll take your advice and I'll actually, you know, get the audio books for, you know, being on the road. I never read any of The Walking Dead, for that matter. So for me, you know, the television version of The Walking Dead, I enjoy it a great deal. I'm a fan. I'm committed to the series, but I don't have anything to compare it to. Same thing with Game of Thrones. However, I did read all of Preacher. I bought the whole set, and I was underwhelmed by Preacher. I think Garth Ennis is phenomenal. I got hooked on Garth Ennis with the Punisher Max series.
Sure, and, sure.
You know, with
you turned me on to that. I got hooked on him with his original run on Hellblazer on the John Constantine book.
Okay, so my thing is now watching Preacher that is on AMC. Being that I read the graphic novels, and as I said, I didn't hate them, I didn't love them. I was kind of underwhelmed, like, you know, it's a little kind of weird for me. And I just, you know, okay. The way that they've kind of gone and creatively and readapted Preacher, it's funny because I've watched the first few episodes and I haven't made up my mind yet whether or not I'm all the way committed. You know, I can't tell you that I'm going to be a dedicated viewer of the Preacher series. And I am tainted because everyone I watch, I'm comparing to the graphic novels. And I wonder if I would have felt the same way if I had read Walking Dead and then watched the screen adaptation, or if I had read Game of Thrones and watched the screen adaptation. Because more often than not, they say, you know, the book is better than the movie, with the exception of a few exceptions that I can think of. What comes to mind immediately is The Firm. I like the book. I like the movie better than the book.
Totally agree.
And what was the one with Keanu Reeves and Al Pacino, the devil?
Devil's Advocate.
Devil's Advocate. Again, I like the movie better than the book. And usually that's not the case. For example, the Bourne series. If you've never read The Bourne Identity, The Bourne Supremacy, and The Bourne Ultimatum, if you've never read those Robert Ludlum books, then, yeah, the movies are great as they stand alone as just action series. But if you've read the books, man, the movies fail miserably because the books are so much better in the story. So in this case, I almost wonder if I want to just leave the books alone. And like I said, with Preacher, if you've never read the graphic novel, then it's probably an interesting show and you might enjoy it. But I just kind of wonder how my point of view would be skewered if I had read Walking Dead, or if I had read the books. And you know, as you complimented the screenwriters kind of going off in their own direction with Game of Thrones, I absolutely love what they're doing. I think it's brilliant. This is, to me, some of the finest TV available today. It's so emotionally compelling that, like, man, I just want to binge watch this. I hate having to wait for
next
season.
Yeah, I hate having to wait week to week on Preacher. I read the graphic novel. I think I liked it, the series of graphic novels. I think I liked it a bit better than you, but I'm really loving what they're doing with the series. The plots that this is one, because it's active, I don't want to give too many spoilers away but I think what they're doing is, like, I'm really enjoying it and I'm definitely hooked in for the ride. And also, without sounding like a total misogynist, holy shit, Ruth Negga is like my new big crush on television. She is so hot and so great and so funny. She is Tulip to the 10th power. I think that character is better on screen than she was in the book, for sure.
And see, that's part of my issue. Like, okay, because I read the graphic novel, this is the Tulip that, you know, that's not Tulip. who the fuck is this chick? You know, Tulip, that's not Tulip. I mean, I don't know. So it's kind of interesting because I'm not sold on the screen adaptation of Preacher yet. I'll give it a little longer. I'll watch it and I'll see if I continue to grow with it and forgive the adaptation, the creative license. But as I said, going back to Game of Thrones and Walking Dead, because I have no familiarity with the original, I'm a huge fan of the film at screen adaptations of those. So I'm speaking of writers and whatnot. You had my brother from Another Mother in the writer's room recently.
Oh, I did, and it's coming out as we air this. It's coming out next Wednesday. Brother from Another Mother being Dave Bautista, who joined me in the writer's room. Finally, like it was one of those great things we've been talking about, and with VAP Lounge too. We've been talking about getting him on forever, and we were DMing back and forth about nothing. He was like, "Oh, how are you set today? Do you want to do it?" And I was like, "Yeah, let's do it right now." So I got him in. We shot the shit for better part of 2 hours, and it's, without giving too much away, I mean, and you know this with fucking Dave, Dave is a guy who holds nothing back, like, in terms of WWE and his last run and, other characters in WWE and films. And I mean, like, it's a really fun episode. I hope people tune in. But yeah, we're, you know, Writer's Room is usually a VIP only show. We're dropping the first part for free because, like crack dealers, we want to give you a taste and then make you pay for it. But, yeah, Dave in the Writer's Room. And it was, firstly, it was a blast. This is the longest we've talked for, you know, years. And, it's a total blast. Like, I can't wait, for people to hear it because he is as forthcoming a dude as you would ever want. And yeah, we talk about WWE. We talk about Guardians of the Galaxy and his film career. We talk about our shared love of my favorite porn star, Remy LaCroix. we lay it all out. So it's a super fun show. I hope people listen to it.
Yeah, he said that, you know, we just got to nail him down, but he said he absolutely wants to come and hang out with us in the VIP lounge, and Dave and I have some pretty good stories to share. And, you know, I've said it if I said it once, I said it 1,000 times. I love that guy for so many reasons, and, you know, he has been like a big brother to me. And our time together in the WWE, you know, like I told you the story about the time he personally said, "Nah, man, we need to go to Vince. This is ridiculous that, you know, I'm beating you again. For what?" And it's rare. Not too many guys would do that. And he and Jericho are the two guys that actually, you know, said, "Hey, man, this is pointless. Let's go talk to Vince about this." And he's man, I am so fucking proud of him. I'm so thrilled. He just wrapped with Guardians of the Galaxy. He got cast in the sequel to one of my favorite films.
Absolutely. We talk like he can't talk much about it, obviously.
Sure, of course.
But Blade Runner is in, for my money, easily one of the top 10 science fiction films of all time. And we talked a little bit off air about it. I won't repeat any of it, but we are, you and I, that is MVP, are very excited for what's coming down the pipe with that, because goddamn, man, it sounds really, really exciting. And it's the line I always use about Dave. Like, I'm over the moon for him, but completely unsurprised, because that guy's got a really unique and incredibly powerful charisma. And, it comes out very clearly in the interview. And, I'm it's one of those guys you're so happy for, because Dave is legitimately one of the good guys.
Yeah. And you know, we say that all the time. We're always happy when something good happens for one of the good guys. And he is, without question, one of the good guys. And I'm pretty stoked about that. That's so cool, man. Wait a minute. I just thought of something else. How much time we got left?
We're already 15 minutes over time. So let's go ahead and do it.
Yeah, let's just go ahead and wrap. I wanted to say this real quick, and this has absolutely nothing to do with any of the stuff we were talking about. Some time ago, I put up for bid my original Beatdown Clan BDC warm-up jacket. I had two of them. And I put them both up for bid on whatever the site is. And they were both bought. One of them was actually paid for. The other one, the guy said, hey, man, I ran into some financial troubles and I can't buy it. I can't pay for it. And I'm sitting here in my office right now looking at it draped over a chair.
Right next to my thing print.
Yeah. Alex, you got it. Text me your damn address when we hang up and I will put it in the mail.
Why
and
would
get
I do
it
that when I can give you shit about it every single week?
Give it to me and I'll get it to you. Damn it. But I'm looking at it right now. The original TV worn warm-up suit that I wore with Loki and Kenny and Samoa Joe, the BDC warm-ups that we had. I don't want it. And I will put it up for sale again. And if you are interested, it will be up for sale. I'll put up the info on my Twitter. You can bid for it. I forgot whatever the bid price was. You take it. Get it off my hands. If you're a collector, you can have it. Or if you are a fan of the Beatdown Clan, the BDC, it has my name on the front. It has BDC on the back. It's a little slice of history. It's all yours. Take it. Have it. Buy it. The guy bid on it. He couldn't get it for whatever reason. But if you have the financial wherewithal, take it. Wear it with pride. I want you to have it. And I always say this, man, the Beatdown Clan was awesome. It was really, really a fun time. I wish that it would have been handled and managed differently. But in the end, I think it's pretty damn cool that I think – didn't Bobby Roode just start with NXT recently?
Yeah, he did.
You got what? Yeah, Bobby Roode, EY, Aries, Samoa Joe. You got some pretty talented guys that seem to have jumped ship. And I always say this, like, why I personally have a professional animosity towards the management of TNA. I have nothing but love and praise for the talent and the production crew who work their asses off every week to bring you the best entertainment they possibly can. A fish rots from his head. However, the guys, the men and women who lace up the boots and who work behind the scenes work feverishly, and I'm always in support of them. And I never, ever, ever wish any ill towards the TNA product, because that's stupid. If you're a fan of professional wrestling, you should hope and want TNA to succeed. It's good for the boys. It's good for the business. I don't work there anymore, but I still maintain I never understood the people who would say, why don't they just die already? Go out of business. That's just ridiculous, because people feed their families and are able to live out their dreams to some extent working there. And that's a beautiful thing. So I want nothing but the best for TNA specifically, because it's good for wrestling to have another major company on the air. And on that note, we'll wrap things up, but how about real quick, Jay Lethal? Do we have an argument for Jay Lethal being one of the best world champions in the biz right now?
We absolutely have an argument for that. He has it over this year. He has been champion now. In addition to having my favorite finisher in the biz with the fucking lethal injection, he has – talk about a guy who has fucking stepped up. Like, he's as good as they come, and he is as legit seeming a world champion as you can get right now. And all praise to Lethal, man. Like without meaning this as a piss on ROH, I wish he was on a bigger stage, because I think the more people who are exposed to him, the more people will come to really enjoy an incredibly charismatic worker.
No question. I've known Jay Lethal a long time, and he's like one of the cool little brother that every time I see him, it's always a pleasure. So kudos to ROH, and you're right. It's not a piss on them at all. I too wish that ROH was more accessible to more fans and was on a bigger stage because, you know what? I love wrestling, professional wrestling. I don't care what three letters you put on it, whatever alphabet soup. When guys are lacing up boots and simulating combat in the name of entertainment, I love it, you know, and you know, I love good wrestling. I love bad wrestling. I love wrestling. And if you're a fan of professional wrestling, you got to pull for all of the companies because it's a beautiful thing for us, the practitioners of the craft, and you, the consumer. And on that note, Alex, take us home.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you can follow the man I have been talking with for a while now.
Probably
the MVP at the 305 MVP on Twitter. And I can't remember. I can't give you your plugs at the end. What are all of the things? Because there's Bandcamp and Instagram and all of these things that you do. Give them your social media stuff.
Okay. So what do we got? I got if you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at the 305 MVP. And if you listen to this podcast and you ever take up take offense to something I say or have a difference of opinion or choose to correct me or whatever. I'm always up for, as we used to say back in Miami back in the day, I could stand a scraping it. You know, I'm at the 305 MVP. On Instagram, I am at @truly_MVP. My Facebook fan page is officially MVP. And if you like the music on the show, I got to update it pretty soon, man. I not update, but I need to create some new music. My Bandcamp is bandcamp.com, but I think it's 305MVP/bandcamp.com, something like that. If you just go to bandcamp.com and look up Return of the Ronin, it'll pop up, and then you can click on more releases. I got a lot of music on there. Some of it's free. Some of it, I think one or two songs you might have to pay $1 for. You just got to put in, you know, the amount that you want to pay. And if you want to pay zero, you put in zero and you can download the song and have it. And that's all I got for you.
And I am at Alex D. Greenfield on Twitter. And yeah, Writer's Room this week, me and Dave Bautista coming out on Wednesday. So listen to that if you dare. And if you want to become a subscriber to MLW Radio's VIP podcast, which includes MVP and I doing many of things after hours, including answering your questions from the MLW Pro Boards. You can sign up for the low, low price of $1.99 per month. We now accept PayPal, so you can do that. Hit up the at MLW Twitter, and you can find all of those details. And folks, thanks very much for listening. Have a great week.